Argument in our third case, United States versus Burrell.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court.
Good morning.
I'm here representing Rodney Burrell, who has appealed his sentence on two issues, an upward departure based on 4A1.3 criminal history, and also an alternative variance under King, the same sentence. Rodney Burrell was originally sentenced 300 months, was remanded a joint motion before the court earlier because he no longer qualified as a career offender. When he appeared back in front of the district court, a revised pre-sentence report was prepared, and Rodney had a advisory guideline of 46 to 57 months. After a lengthy sentencing hearing that was based on an argument that I can only surmise as is a punishment for the crime or a punishment for the person, and that's what I think we're here really to talk about today. Rodney's crime, his offense conduct, was the possession of 17.34 grams of cocaine base. And that was a base offense level of 22 under the advisory guideline. And what we ended up with as the departed advisory guideline was a base or total offense level of 30, which had a drug equivalency, if you will, looking at it in that regard of going down the chart, what drug quantity would have driven a drug level quantity of 30 or offense level of 30 after acceptance. You're looking at almost a kilogram of cocaine base to drive that offense level.
I didn't understand your comment earlier about, is it punishment for the crime or the person? Isn't sentence supposed to be individualized? So that means it's the person and the crime?
It is, and so what I was saying is we had, I think the sentencing argument was the punishment for the crime based on the advisory guideline, the drug quantity, criminal history. The advisory guideline punishment was 46 to 57 months. The district court determined that was not a suitable punishment, that a range of 46 to 57 months didn't fit the crime, as was Rodney Burrell committing that crime.
Right.
They did it based on criminal history.
Well, don't you use both, though? Isn't the court entitled to use both?
Certainly, Your Honor. So in looking, but Your Honors have to, in examining what's reasonable, what's a proper departure, what's a proper variance, certainly have to look at the offense conduct, the 3553A factors. You're looking at the nature and offense of the offense, So if the offense is a small amount of drugs that you're punishing, you've got that certain scale to start with. Criminal history brings you across, and that's what the court used as its basis to depart, a criminal history that's underrepresented by the score. Now, he was scored as a criminal history 4 in the chart. Everything that he had in criminal history was scored. So there were no offenses, no prior arrests, no other conduct that was unscored, which is normally what you see when you get to a criminal history.
Since the court also gave this sentence under Savignon Batut, don't we look at, he did the guidelines, he did the calculations, we can argue about that, and people can say whether he got it right or wrong, but he also sentenced in the alternative under Savignon, whether it's alternative or not, but instead under Savignon Batut, under the factors as he talked about and articulated during the case, don't we turn to see if the sentence is unreasonable under his view of the 3553A factors?
Yes, sir. So those factors were the offense conduct, and again, that's the small, and he acknowledged that Mr. Burrell was not a big-time drug trafficker. I think those were his words. So then we had to go to recidivism is what the court focused on. The government's motion was, Mr. Burrell was a killer, a drug dealer, a dangerous society. So that's what we talked about at sentencing. We talked about those things. Was Mr. Burrell a killer? Did he deserve to be punished again, because he was a killer, because he had prior drug offenses. So we went through those facts, and the defendant rebutted those contentions and those suggestions.
So you just think the judge's conclusions, the sentence conclusion based on his review and articulation of those factors was unreasonable? That's your argument?
I think taking in whole and then taking it the separate part, once Mr. Burrell became this offense conduct, something changed with him, and that's what we argued to the court. The criminal history started when he was 16. He was in jail from the time he was 16.
But the answer to my question is, you think that under looking at this under Sauvignon Matute, that the judge's review and articulation of the factors and the result was unreasonable?
I do, Your Honor.
Okay.
I do, Your Honor.
And you're pointing to what you think was the most unreasonable?
I think the facts that the court pointed to as the reason for the departure and the variance, which were the same factors, they did not delineate different factors, said for the same reasons I've delineated in my departure, I'm also doing the variance. So they mirror each other in that regard. He was looking
but,
at...
But Sauvignon Matute doesn't require any variance or any departure at all. It just says, of course, I've gone through that, says the court, and I've walked through that, and I've explained sort of what my guideline sentencing would be if I were bound by that, which I'm not. But I'm telling you that looking at the factors I am bound by, and here's my reasons why, this is the sentence I hand down.
Then under when you have the courts said because of these factors, I mean, and did delineate why he was going to this sentence.
Right.
And the court simply, if you have to have no reason for going a 210-month sentence.
But those reasons within the context of a guideline calculation, they are influenced by other factors.
Yes, sir.
Those same factors don't come to play in calculating under Sauvignon Matute, do they? I mean, as sort of a formulaic way, they don't come into play, do they?
Not in a quantitative formula, no, sir. No, sir, I don't, not arguing that point.
Yeah, I'm not arguing with you. I'm just talking about the interplay between Sauvignon Matute and guidelines, reasons, and calculations.
And I take that point, and my argument was that the court simply said, for all of the things I've already discussed,
right,
I've stated on the reason, because I'm required to, the sentence that I'm giving today. Whether it's right under the guideline, I would give
I think you'd have a fair art. I think you'd have, but I don't know if this would be circuit precedent, but I think you'd have a fair argument if the court jumped immediately and said, I've considered all the 3553 factors and this is my determination. But it didn't. It did all this preliminary discussion and analysis of the various sentencing factors. It may not have done it to the Queen's taste, but clearly did articulate some reasons and then went to this alternative.
So
everything that went before, don't you think, weighs in the alternative?
I think they certainly do. I wasn't arguing that.
Okay.
Couldn't say these matter. They obviously matter in the decision. If we didn't have the guidelines and he went through the same rationale, obviously that's what he would have talked about, whether regardless of mentioning any section of the guideline. He would have talked about this is who Rodney Burrell criminal history was. It's common sense. What I pointed out is from age 16 until he was sentenced at 24, when he was before the court, something changed and gave the court, or I asked the court to give it pause and look at a reason to say something different, because the court was looking at a recidivism and said the reason I'm giving you this much time is because if you get back on the street, you're going to commit other crimes. His record up and through 2009 is what the court was looking at, because since 2009, of course, he has been in custody, state custody on the instant offense for the 11 months, and then prosecuted in federal court for the same offense. His brother being shot and killed, which is a great tragedy, otherwise it's just an emotional factor. And I wasn't trying to belay that, but I said, look at what happened with his behavior after that point. Prior to that point, in jail.
You know, I think you did the best possible thing you could do for your client.
Thank you, ma'am.
I mean, I do, but...
I tried, obviously, but empirically looking at his behavior before that point in his life, everything that's in the PSR, everything the government argued, he was involved in gang, he was involved in drugs, he was involved in what ended up being a homicide. All those things were true, and while he was in prison, all of those days, but I think it was about 60 days prior to this 2009, all those things in prison continued. Bad behavior, nonconformity, infraction after infraction after infraction. In 2009, what we saw simply was that change, that ended, that behavior ended.
I guess the district court just didn't find the change as significant as you did.
Yes, ma'am.
And your client did.
Yes, ma'am. I argued very much that the jump from the bottom end of less than 4 years to the 17 and a half years was a huge disparity. It created a sentencing disparity considering the amount of drugs, the offense conduct, what he'd already been sentenced to, and the fact that he'd already served 11 months in state court. And I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Joshua Rogers, and I represent the United States. As the court has noted, Hargrove recently came out this year and upheld broadly Saviama Matute, and we would argue that the district court did, in fact, impose an alternative variant sentence that was reasonable, and for many of the same reasons that the district court's decision should be upheld with respect to its upward departure, it should also be upheld with regard to this alternative variant sentence. This court, defendant would prefer that the district court have only concentrated on, in a vacuum, the PSR and that criminal history. But in fact, there was a lot more to the picture. And what was a part of this picture was that this is a defendant who simply does not know how to be out of prison and comply with the law. And there's a long history. I can walk through that for the court if it would like, but I know that's available for the court in the briefs and also in the district court's findings. The defendant's essential argument is that he's asking this court to second-guess the district court's bases. This is not just some willy-nilly sentence from a district court. These were 18 pages of uninterrupted explanation of why it was doing what it was doing. And that's apart from the many other pages of dialogue between the court and defense counsel. As this court has stated in...
Well, let me ask you this. I take your point, certainly, on the record of this case. But what if, instead of 18 pages, we had 18 lines? And the first line was an improper guidelines calculation. But the second line was, alternatively, I think that I've looked at all the 3553 factors, and I would come to the same sentence.
Well,
would you think that that would be sufficient?
It would depend what was in the content of those 18 lines.
I've told you, the only thing that's in 18 lines is very big printing, so it takes up 18 lines.
Okay, so if I understand the court's hypothetical correctly, the court improperly calculates the guidelines,
right,
and then just says, but whatever I've done, I would have done this under Saviama Matute.
Yeah.
That would be a substantively unreasonable sentence. The court still has to give lawful reasons, and if there are no reasons to review, then that would be substantively unreasonable for a court to just try to rubber...
Procedurally unreasonable.
It would be procedurally unreasonable,
right.
We would argue that it's substantially unreasonable. I mean, giving 210 months to a defendant with no reasons for it, there's really no basis for it.
But you would have had the reasons, an improper guidelines calculation. That's the first sentence.
I mean...
And the second, you know, under the guidelines, I calculate your sentences X, Y, and Z. Alternatively, I say for all the 3553 factors, I come to the same conclusion.
That we would argue that that's not an articulation of reason, simply saying what a guidelines range is.
Yeah, I think so. Thank you.
You're welcome. So in this case, defendant is essentially saying to this court the very same thing it said to the district court, and please respect the fact that this defendant made a dramatic change when he distanced himself from gang-related activity, and we would note that it wasn't the defendant who distanced himself from gang-related activity.
Isn't it clear from the record in these circumstances that the district court understood the arguments being made by the defendant and responded to them in a rather lengthy manner? It may not be the way the defendant wanted the response to be, but I remember the court talking about what he did in prison, the kind of people he hung around with, and what he did, what was the result. So maybe not be happy with the outcome in some quarters, but didn't the judge, isn't it clear from this record, the judge took that into account?
This court left no stone unturned. And the defendant can point to nothing other than his dissatisfaction with the amount of time he got. I believe the record speaks for itself in terms of why the court did what it did, and we would therefore rest on the authority of Hargrove and also the record itself to support the district court's findings. And unless the circuit court has any further questions, I would simply ask that it affirm and take my seat.
I don't think we have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I did not point out one of the things that I may have drawn your attention to bring us here today to argue is that the district court had a categorical rejection of United States versus Peppers and a disagreement that any defendant should receive any credit for post-sentencing rehabilitation or post-arrest rehabilitation. The Peppers court obviously found it wasn't that post-sentencing evidence, they argued to be highly relative because in the court, in fashioning a sentence, either guideline or 3553, is going to look at and said post-sentencing conduct sheds light on the likelihood he will engage in future criminal conduct, a central factors that courts must assess. And of course, that was the central factor that the court was assessing, is whether or not Mr. Burrell would engage in future conduct. But the court, in several instances, said Mr. Burrell shouldn't, well, actually I think he said, should he get a good conduct medal for following the rules in prison?
You're talking about the Supreme Court case, United States versus Pepper? Is that
yes.
What you're talking about?
Yes, ma'am.
And where in your view does the district court do that? It says I'm not going to follow United States versus Pepper?
It says I recognize United States versus Peppers. Joint Appendix 120, I believe, 120, 121 is one of the instances.
Yeah, I'm looking at that. Uh-huh. The case from the Supreme Court. I've taken the argument into account.
He says he has to. At line 6 and 7 on 121.
Earlier he says, I don't think people ought to get extra credit for that.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, he's, yes, okay. I understand your argument.
He's just
saying he didn't really agree with it, but yep. He has to, and he's done it.
Or it doesn't think it applies here.
All right. Right, whatever. He has taken that law into account. It's not a statement he's not going to follow it.
And that was the point, because that was the only thing that you could empirically look at in this case. There was the only thing that you could look at that there was a reason not to upwardly depart, a reason not to, and it wasn't just an argument. It was in this case, plain
see,
and simple, a change.
What precedes that is I've taken into account his arguments about the absence of getting violations while you're incarcerated. I don't think people ought to get extra credit for that. It doesn't seem to me that Pepper's really talking about that. Is it?
The Pepper's viewed and said that I was using the language from Pepper's to say why it was important. What the court said, this post-arrest rehabilitation, it was very good information to show about someone's conduct while they were in prison as an indicator of their propensity to recidivate.
Help me, because you obviously know Pepper better than I do, but what were the what was the fact situation, Pepper?
And I would...
Was this conduct in prison?
In prison, yes, ma'am. It was post-sentencing behavior. Pepper's was a remand resentencing. The court saying, I can't take into consideration...
So it was a long period in prison, presumably.
I take it was more than 18, 24 months, which is the similar case in here. To get to the Supreme Court, I imagine it was longer than that. But by the time the district court had refused to acknowledge or said they couldn't acknowledge it, which is why I believe it was up in the U.S. Supreme Court.
What was the period here?
The period here was from 2010 until 2012. We had, I believe, the period of about 20 months where he was in BOP in Lompoc. He was sentenced originally by the district court in the 2010.
And the it's your position, or the way you remember Pepper, is that it was simply obeying the rules in prison that the Supreme Court regarded as an indicator?
I think they looked at all post-rehabilitation behavior, post-sentencing behavior is what Peppers was looking at, if my recollection.
It all took place in prison?
That's my recollection, because it specifically said post-sentencing behavior.
But you know, you could...
Obviously could have been released.
Short, you could get out.
Certainly.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Stiers, I understand that you are a court appointed. We very much appreciate your efforts.
Yes, ma'am.
You did a fine job for your client.
Thank you, ma'am.
Can I briefly respond to the Pepper argument since he raised it the second time?
Sure.
I can help provide some clarity to some of the questions.
It's a search for truth here.
Just very briefly.
We're getting in the weeds of the facts of Pepper. Pepper was a case where a district court categorically barred defendant even speaking about his rehabilitative efforts. That's not what happened here. The district court stated, I have carefully...
Were all these rehabilitative efforts in Pepper in prison?
I don't recall whether it was in prison or out of prison, okay. But the court did not want to hear them at all.
Okay, I think we can read Pepper.
Right.
Okay. Thanks very much. We will come down and greet the lawyers and then go directly to our...